Welcome to the podcast Block 52. My name is Katharina Gera, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Immutable Insight. I'm talking today with Andy Fleury. He's the founder and CEO of AlgoTrader. AlgoTrader previously was started for a traditional asset hedge fund company that Andrew used to work for. They've emerged into the crypto space, and now 50% of their clients are actually crypto clients. They also offer a second product. It is for banks to offer crypto to retail clients, but he's better at explaining. So listen and enjoy. Welcome to this episode of the podcast Block 52. My name is Katharina Gera and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Immutable Insight. And today I have the pleasure to talk to Andy Fleury, the founder and CEO of AlgoTrader. Welcome, Andy.
Pleasure to be here.
Andy, what do you do exactly and what does your company do?
Yeah, so we're a Swiss fintech company. We provide a platform for trading and execution of digital assets and cryptocurrencies. So basically, we help institutional players to connect to the various crypto exchanges, market makers, and brokers, and trade digital assets with the same ease of use that we've had in the traditional trading space.
Okay. And you already differentiated between the traditional and the digital assets. So what was your life before you came in, got in touch with crypto?
Yeah, so I was actually a manager at a hedge fund here in Switzerland, and we traded derivatives, so we traded futures and options for quite a few years. And out of that time, our platform, AlgoTrader, evolved. We did that in 2014. So in the first few years, we also supported traditional assets, equities, futures, FX. And actually, I think 3.5 years ago, we had a first, I believe it was three clients that were interested in cryptocurrencies, and they actually extended our platform to be able to trade cryptos. To be honest, in the beginning, I wasn't involved in the crypto space, and it was actually those three clients that got us thinking, wait, you know, if there's three clients that want to do this, maybe we should look into this space and add crypto capability. So it was a small sort of experiment for us in the first place. And to be, you know, fully honest, we didn't see what came since then. You know, we never expected this to become as big as it is now. You know, nowadays that the digital asset part is actually the bigger part of our business.
Interesting. Let's try to put that just at least broadly into perspective. So you had three out of roughly how many clients did you have back then?
I don't remember. It was probably about 30 or 40, maybe.
Okay. And how is it today? How many of your clients today?
It's pretty much 50-50. 50-50.
Oh, wow.
We still have a lot of traditional hedge funds, a lot of crypto funds, and we also have a bank now with Signum. So there is a lot of new names from the crypto space, but what's interesting is that we also now see hedge funds from the traditional space that get started and trade digital assets. And the interesting thing is that even though both sides, it's about trading, that the language is very different, you know, in the traditional space. And the crypto space, blockchain space, often invented words for things that already existed. To give you an example, in the crypto space, people talk about bots, right? In traditional trading, it's a trading strategy. It's the same thing, or an algorithm. So, you know, often you kind of have to translate. So, you know, traditional hedge funds, they're new to the crypto space. So we're often helping them translate languages.
given, you know, your client portfolio, you probably also have a view of how the industry as a whole is changing. Just today, I had another call with a big German traditional asset manager, and for them, still crypto, you know, was very speculative, has no purpose, it's just a hype. And apparently, you know, most of your clients think differently. What's your personal view on the state of adoption, and where and how fast or slow do you see the space grow?
Well, I think this depends a bit on where you sit geographically. You know, we are headquartered in Zurich in Switzerland. And, you know, here, this is really becoming a banking play. We got about 10 banks that have an offering around crypto custody and trading already. And there is more and more banks jumping on the train. So, you know, it is kind of an institutional play already. I understand in Germany, it's kind of the same. So more and more institutional asset managers and banks are looking into this. There was a report by Fidelity, I think it was in January of this year, and apparently 20% of institutional investors do hold digital assets or cryptos already, and 40% are looking and evaluating an investment. This is a huge number.
Okay,
interesting. So I think also, you know, yeah, the adoption is already here, so to speak. You know, it's going to grow. And then just to add on to that, you know, last week there have been three big announcements. One was that BitGo, the large U.S. custodian, acquired Tagomi, the largest crypto broker in the mm-hmm. U.S. Then Coinbase acquired Tagomi. Then the other announcement was that BitGo launching a prime brokerage for digital assets. And the third one was Genesis Trading acquiring Vault and also offering prime brokerage. So basically three big, huge names in the US, all three within the same week, announced launching prime brokerage services. And prime brokerage are geared towards institutional investors. So that's another big data point for us.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Where do you see those that are still hesitating? What do you see? What do you hear? What are the big obstacles that still keep them from entering the space?
I think right now it's really a regulation. Again, this depends country to country. I'm really happy to hear, you know, that Germany now has the custody license. We're looking forward to the changes here in Switzerland and in Liechtenstein, you know, hopefully beginning of next year. You know, looking at the US, I think this is the big problem in the US, that regulation is behind, that maybe in some states like New York State, for example, there are certain licenses you can apply for. Same in the UK, you know, there isn't really any particular license you can apply to. I think that's the biggest problem. And you know, the institutional space, they are seeking regulation. I think it's by no surprise that there are now 50 players in the German custody space, because Germany just released that, issued that custody license. So I think regulation will be the driver of many of these developments we'll see. And let's be honest, you know, this development in the blockchain space, for the first time in technology, at least to my understanding, it's Europe and Asia driving the development and not the US. Now, normally, everything that's tech is driven out of the US, is driven out of Silicon Valley. But this time around, I think it's actually Europe and Asia that's got a bit of a lead.
Okay, then maybe let's have a look at the clients. Who are your typical clients and who's your ideal client? Who are the types of institutions, I assume, that you work with?
Yep. So, you know, maybe to explain that. So we have two products. One is the core AlgoTrader product, which is a quantitative trading system for the buy side. So buy side meaning hedge funds, prop trading companies that basically trade their own capital, family offices, and so forth. So we have, you know, traditionally a lot of clients on that side. And then the new product that we just released a few weeks ago called Wireswarm is a digital asset trading and execution platform for the sell side, so for banks, so helping banks to offer a crypto trading to their clients. So for that one, for Wireswarm, the new product, you know, we're specifically targeting banks, but also crypto brokers, for example.
Okay, so let me get that straight. So if, let's say, a German private bank wants to offer their clients now to buy Bitcoin and Ethereum, they could come to you, and then that will be separate from the core banking system. Or how and what exactly would be the offering that the bank then could do to their clients?
Well, so this is actually a question that comes up a lot. So what does a bank need in order to offer crypto-related services? So, you know, there's various components. Obviously, you need something for KYC, AML, know your customer, and anti-money laundry. You need a component to store crypto assets, to store your private key. So basically an enterprise grade crypto storage solution. And then you need something for trading. So to connect the bank to the various exchanges, brokers, and market makers. And this is what we do. So we don't provide everything. Typically, mm-hmm. we partner up with custody providers, KYC AML providers, to then come up with a combined offering to get the bank going.
And would that make a difference between Switzerland and maybe the European Union or ECB regulated thing? Or are you offering to both legal and regulatory jurisdictions?
We are. So right now, you know, the cryptocurrencies don't really fall under any jurisdiction, or in particular, MiFID II, which is a European regulation, doesn't really cover cryptocurrency. So we're outside of that. Obviously, once digital assets, you know, digital equity, digital shares get going, they will obviously fall under the local jurisdiction and local regulation, and then that will also apply for us. But right now, you know, there are you know, a lot of experiments, but there isn't really a secondary market yet for digital assets. So for STOs, we've been talking about STOs for a long time. I've already thought it would happen in 2019, which it didn't. You know, now it's 2020, and it's still, we don't really see secondary marketplaces, so exchanges. But this will happen eventually.
So from, you said the one product has been launched and the other one has been around. Where do you see the target portfolio? Do you think both will be equally weighted, or do you think that the trading business will remain stronger and what the banks do on the side is just really an add-on business? What's your future perspective on that?
Well, you know, we definitely emphasize a lot on the new product from the development that we see here in Switzerland, but also in Germany now with the banks. We see this as a big opportunity. You know, looking at banks globally, we did a bit of research, and there is around 15,000 banks that offer some sort of trading related services, you know, like with an online banking where you can buy and sell shares. Our assumption is that every one of these banks will eventually also offer digital assets, because at some point every asset will be blockchain based no matter what. This is going to happen anyway. So our assumption is that every one of these banks will eventually need a solution like WireSwarm. And this is a huge opportunity. You know, you could compare this with Bloomberg in the early days, right? When electronic trading came up, you know, it was clear that market data was becoming a big topic, and Bloomberg took that opportunity and is now the huge company that Bloomberg is.
Yeah. Okay. And when you look at your own company, what are the biggest challenges for growth right now to participate from that market growth?
Yeah, well, it's the growth itself, right? And growth means growing the team. So we're heavily investing on the sales side, you know, with the three locations, Zurich, New York, and Singapore. We're hiring new sales managers, and that's hard, especially also in the COVID situation, you know, finding people with the right network, with, you know, that, you know how to sell financial technology to institutions. This is the challenging part. So it's not actually building the product. You know, the product has been there for many years. It's stable. We have a great development team. So, you know, I would say personally that the much bigger part of my attention goes to sales and business development than to the product development.
When you look at the current, let's say, price levels, and as we speak, you know, Bitcoin is again once above 10,000 and Ether is above $250. Sometimes I wonder how much of the space is still driven by this hype and, you know, just the FOMO principles. And I always wonder how much is the underlying tech also the driver, how much is it, you know, just the market hype. Given you talk to so many hedge funds, do you have a view on what's prevailing as a reason for them? Is it the opportunity as an asset class? Is it the narrative of, you know, an independent, non-inflatable asset? Is it the technology, or what do you think drives the adoption?
It cannot be the technology. You know, there's so much tech around. There has to be more than the technology. I think, speaking for both banks, but also for hedge funds, it's the new asset class. You know, a hedge fund is looking for any investment opportunity that's decorrelated, not correlated with the rest. And as we know, you know, for most part, digital assets are not correlated with all the other asset classes. And for banks, it's kind of the same. It's a new asset class. It's a new opportunity to gain new clients. You know, in the younger generation, actually, a lot of the, you know, kids, they do play with cryptos. They have accounts on exchanges that they trade with, but they're not able to store those assets at the bank. And what does a bank do? You know, it's safekeeping assets. So I think for banks, it's very natural to offer safekeeping of digital assets as well. So this is a new opportunity for banks to generate revenue. You know, fees are still quite high on the trading side and on the custody side. I think this will come down tremendously. It's going to become a commodity eventually. But right now, you know, for the early adopters, for the banks that do have an offering already, this is actually a great revenue opportunity. Here in Switzerland, the first bank that launched an offering was Swissquote in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. And that was a very successful year for Swissquote. And actually the biggest driver for their profit was the new digital asset offering they launched in that year.
I'm not sure if you also have a view on central bank digital currency, but we've talked also, you know, alongside your two products about hedge funds and about banks itself. And then on the other side, there's also the big discussion about central bank digital currency. Do you see that also as a requirement for the let's say, ultimate institutional adoption? Or do you think that this is really something that's very client-centric, as you just, you know, explained? And so it will be driven by retail demand and clients, you know, needing to be served at banks.
I don't really see it as a necessity. I think the market will move forward with or without central bank digital currency. You know, stable coins is kind of a replacement or a proxy for central bank digital currency until that emerges. We clearly see a need for stable coins. You know, Tether is the heaviest traded crypto asset we have at the moment. This is definitely necessary. I think it'll be driven by demand. And now that more and more regulators are looking at blockchain-based service offerings, launching central bank digital currency will just come naturally. It's going to take some time. It's not going to happen overnight. I don't know which country is going to be the big driver. But, you know, I'm not actually worried that this will hinder the development in any way.
Okay. Well, I think to a certain extent, I thought maybe because you're also based in Singapore, if you have a number of countries moving forward with it, I think eventually the pressure to the others will increase. And I think also, obviously, when we spoke about how important regulation is also for institutional money managers, and, you know, once you have an institutional central bank digital currency, then obviously the whole discussion whether or not there will be regulation is probably much easier to have, because as soon as the, you know, the national banks are moving forward, then that may change that. All right. Maybe let's take, let's say, another bigger look on the blockchain and crypto asset trading space as a whole. We've already, you know, touched upon quite a few things, but if you look at the world maybe 3 to 5 years from now, what do you think will be the things that eventually drive it? Will it stay Bitcoin? Will it be tokenization? Will it be a whole new blockchain? Or what do you think will, from an asset class perspective, will be the very key trends over the next?
Yeah, I have a very clear view on that. You know, kind of our vision of the future is that a few years from now, every type of asset will be tokenized. You know, be it company shares, so bankable assets, but also non-bankable assets like real estate or art. So everything will be blockchain based, and this is going to completely disrupt you know, how banks operate today. And it will require a new generation of financial technology components that don't yet exist today. Some of them do, but others don't. This is in my view, we are just at the beginning of a completely new era in the financial sector. I think that eventually, you know, trading and moving assets is not just going to be limited to banks, but it will be available in many different parts of our lives. I think it'll be, you know, much more integrated into social media, into apps, into everyday communication. So I think we're actually just still at the very beginning of you know, a great new development.
What a wonderful closing outlook and vision. And one of the signature things that we do is we always ask, who do you think is Satoshi Nakamoto?
I think it's a cat. I don't know.
I just love how creative people are in this space, because, I mean, we've done more, you know, more than 60, I don't know how many episodes we've had by now. We've just always get a new but somewhat funny and an ironic answer. It's just great. Thank you very much, Andy. I really enjoyed the talk, and all the best of luck with AlgoTrader's future.
Thank you, Katarina. It was a pleasure.